Redbox Media is changing the way media is done. Streaming, podcasting, live web events, mobile apps, all we do is done to embrace the current landscape and deliver content that connects you with where you are. Redbox Media.
Welcome to A Seeking Heart with Allison Gingras here on Breadbox Media. I am so excited this morning to share with you the author of I Am Margaret, out from Chesterton Press. It's actually the first book of four. We're going to talk today with the author of those books, Karina Turner. Karina is joining us all the way from England today. This is so exciting. Welcome, Karina.
Thanks.
Did I say it wrong? I did, didn't I? After that whole conversation.
That's okay.
It's just, I give up.
It's difficult. It's Karina. But
Karina. And I said Karina after we had this whole, we had like 10 minutes of her teaching me.
Everyone is programmed to think it's Karina, so don't worry, but it's Karina.
I even wrote it not phonetically. Apparently I can't read phonetics. So Karina. Welcome to the show, and thanks for not hanging up after all of that. I still said it wrong. It's kind of funny. Not probably to you, but.
I once had a birthday cake that said happy birthday, Coriana.
So, oh.
The bakery got it wrong.
So, Karina.
Karina.
Karina, welcome to the show. And I'm so thrilled to have you here. I said good morning, and she's like, well, it's kind of afternoon here. It's about 3 o'clock, you said, just about?
3 o'clock, yeah.
Well, we're going to talk. Oh, that's wonderful. We get to talk during the Divine Mercy Hour. That's kind of exciting. It's 3 o'clock there, so that's the Divine Mercy Hour. Well, it's wonderful to have you here. Karina, oh my gosh, Karina. I'm so sorry, Karina. It's not even funny anymore. I'm so sorry, Karina.
I really don't get too excited about it.
Oh, it's too funny. Please tell us something about yourself. Well, you talk this time and I'll just stop and listen. It's only for the best.
Okay, I hate open-ended questions like this. Let's see. Obviously, I'm from England.
What part of England are you from?
I'm from the southwest, Gloucestershire, mm-hmm. Which probably means nothing to you, but it's near the it's the part of the country, just sort of to the right hand side of Wales.
Ah, that's now I know where you are.
Yeah. Although I've used that example with people before, and then they introduced me. This is Karina from Wales.
That's funny.
I'm from the UK. I'm a Catholic. I was received into full communion in 2010. Gosh, time's flying.
So you're a convert. So you're
a convert,
new to
the
faith.
I was brought up Methodist. And then I got confirmed the first time, and then I became Catholic in 2010.
What brought you to the church, if you don't mind me asking?
Yes, I think I had actually, for a very long time, I had felt drawn to the church, but mm-hmm. One sort of has that, one has a bit of a wall that one doesn't even realise. You think, oh, I'm not prejudiced, I'm very ecumenical. But then you actually have a wall that says, scary Catholics, do not go here. So that was kind of stopping me. And in the end, it was partly the constant draw, and it was part what really sort of kicked me into action to actually climb up the wall and look over, was I was a bit dissatisfied with the way things were going in the Anglican Church. Sort of they were accepting things that were obviously... not correct, you know, and I was just afraid it was just going to get worse and worse. So the only people who seemed to be standing up for, you know, life or sexual ethics or whatever seemed to be the Catholics. So eventually I just sort of had to look over the wall. And I was also trying to discern whether I had a religious vocation. Mm-hmm. As you can imagine, it's rather difficult to discern that if you're in a denomination where you're not sure you're going to be able to stay. the direction of that denomination. So that was also quite a strong force. I was just like, well, I know it's like scary Catholics over there, but I'm going to have to at least look because I can't see where else. So I looked over the wall and I was like, oh, this is nice. They seem to be correct. So I climbed over, haven't looked back.
I can tell you're a writer because you have this great imagery. It's perfect for radio, creating these great images that I can just see you peeking over the wall and kind of getting a ladder, climbing up.
Well, that's what it felt like.
What particular, you talk about a vocation call, a religious life, obviously, into becoming a sister or a nun. Was there any particular denominations that you, that you looked at, any congregations, I mean, not denominations, congregations.
Yes, I actually very nearly joined the Dominican Sisters of St. Joseph. They're down in the New Forest. They're a comparatively new order. They split off from another congregation of Dominican Sisters. When was it? A few decades ago now, I think, because that congregation had sort of taken on quite a modern way of life and stopped some of the traditional aspects of religious life. And there was a group of the sisters who wanted to continue to keep these traditions. So for a while they lived sort of separately but part of the same congregation, and then they split off. So they're a very, very good order, quite traditional. But they've got I think they've got a really good balance between sort of the best aspects of, you know, the old traditions and sort of like a modern take on things. They've actually just recently been made responsible for all the catechesis in the Diocese of Portsmouth, so they're very busy now.
Wow, I guess they are. They're very popular. The Dominican Sisters are very popular here in the United States as well. They're probably the most growing population of religious sisters.
So they're definitely the ones are very. They're good, aren't they?
Yeah, they're doing something right, which is exciting. It's great to see that. So,
I almost joined them. I got as far as going for the live-in week, which is when you sort of just live within the enclosure and sort of do everything like they do. And then it just wasn't really right for me. I just felt like God was saying, "Well, thank you for the offer, but go away and get on with your writing." Here I am.
So you got on with your writing. Do you have do you have a degree in English, or do you have a degree in writing or literature?
I have a degree in English language and literature, not in creative writing.
I have the same degree. But mine was, I had a, we used to call them a minor. So I minored in writing, but I just have such an admiration for those who can write fiction. I love character development. I'm just not any good at it. How did you like creating your own characters, your own people? It's like being like a creator of sorts.
Yeah, I find this sort of question really difficult because I'm not really doing anything consciously. The characters are just there. For example, in the new series I'm writing, I wanted a Muslim character in the book, and I was like, right, so I need a Muslim character. And then these two characters pretty much jumped out of my head and they were off running. And I haven't been able to stop them since. So, you know, I wasn't sitting around going, oh, well, I think they'll like this and perhaps they'll like that. You know, I do that a bit with physical appearance. I'm like, oh, what colour's their hair? You know, well, it's not really a question in this case because they're Asian. So, but with characters with different colour hair, I'll be thinking about that. But what they're actually like, that just comes, you know, Holy Spirit, I think. Here's the character into my head.
That's how you know you're using the gifts and talents that the Lord has given you, because it's such a natural gift. So we're talking today with Corinna. Did I say it right? I did it again. It's Corinna.
Corinna.
Oh my goodness. Anyway, see, the good thing about this is the more I mess it up, I've come to the conclusion, This is how I justify my horrible ability to get out of my own head, that more people will remember it because I've done such a horrible job of saying it. Corinna. Yes.
That wasn't bad. Yeah.
Getting better. Turner, she is the author of I Am Margaret, and this is out from Chesterton Press. So tell us a little bit. We have about 2 minutes before we go to break. Can you tell us a little bit about I Am Margaret?
Okay. In 2 minutes.
We could start leaving with a cliffhanger. It's always it's a good way in writing, right, to get them to come to the second book. We leave them with a cliffhanger, gets them to come back to the second segment.
It's set in the future. The main character is an 18-year-old girl. She's a Christian, which is Catholic. In that time in the future, religion is completely forbidden in quite a lot of countries, and definitely in the Euro-bloc, as it is. Mm-hmm. And she's a believer. That's what they call it in those days. And this basically carries the death penalty if anyone finds out. And also, when young adults reach the age of 18, they get sorted. They have to take these tests, which are sort of physical and mental aptitude tests. And if they don't pass them, they get sent away to basically a detention centre, where they have to exercise for 2 years, if they're lucky. And then they get medically recycled. So their organs are basically forcibly taken and used to fix everyone. So it's quite an unpleasant world they're in. And obviously, Margaret, the heroine, she's in trouble because she's a believer to start with. And she knows she's going to fail her sorting. So, uh-oh.
Well, stay tuned to find out how Margaret fails her sorting and what happens and more about this wonderful book, I Am Margaret, by Corinna Turner. You're listening to A Seeking Heart with Allison Gingras here on Breadbox Media. We'll be right back. Breadbox Media is changing the way media is done. Streaming, podcasting, live web events, mobile apps. All we do is done to embrace the current landscape and deliver content that connects you with where you are. Breadbox Media. Welcome back to A Seeking Heart with Allison Gingras here on Breadbox Media. And Allison's brain is fighting with her this morning because guess what? There's a name that she has a hard time pronouncing. And her brain wants to say it one way and it's pronounced another way. And as we went back from commercial, I went into panic mode. And you know what? Now I don't remember which one it is. It's Corinna, right? No.
Yes, it is.
Yay! Thank you, Jesus. We're just going to let the Holy Spirit talk and we're going to let Corinna talk, and I'm gonna listen because she has so many wonderful things to say. So your book, I Am Margaret, is this dystopian genre that I have to be quite honest, maybe it's my age, I have not been interested in it. I've never seen, I saw it compared to The Hunger Games and to what's the other one?
Divergent?
That's it. Divergent. Thank you. See, so I've not been interested, but I know that this is a very hot thing right now. Teenage girls are just, and even young adults, and even I've even heard friends my age who are reading it. Why this genre? What brought you to it?
Ooh, let's see. That's a difficult question.
I'm not known for my hardball questions.
No, it's just I hadn't really thought about how did I come to writing it. I think the answer is yes. Actually, no, I can see how it happened. I think because two of the influences on me on the idea coming together were in fact dystopian. So that would be why. There were kind of three influences on this book. The first one was probably the CTS Life of St. Margaret Clitheroe. Actually, you won't know what the CTS is, will you? The Catholic Truth Society. It's the Catholic publisher in the UK. It's like Ignatius Press in the UK. And they do Lives of the Saints. So St. Margaret Clitheroe. Do you know anything about St. Margaret?
No, I was just making a note to ask you when you... I've never heard of her.
Right. Well, English saint from Yorkshire. Mm-hmm. If you know where the book's set, that will tally. Elizabethan, she was the wife of a butcher during the persecution of Catholics, which went on for a long time. Oh. And her husband was sort of conformed to the Anglican Church, but she reverted to her Catholic faith. And she was a wonderful lady, and he really loved her, and she was a great wife. And so he paid all her fines, because people got fined a lot of money if they didn't go to the Anglican Church. But she organised masses in her house, and she hid priests, and she got thrown in prison several times. I can't remember how many times now. And she developed very sort of ascetic ways of life in prison, which she carried on when she came out. She was a very holy lady. And eventually she got captured hiding a priest, I think it was, and put on trial and sentenced to death. And she wouldn't plead one way or the other, because if she did, they would make all of her household, her children and her servants and everything, come on the witness stand and accuse her, or they'd have to lie and perjure themselves. So she refused to enter a plea, guilty or innocent. Unfortunately, the punishment in those days for doing that was you had to be crushed to death by a lot of heavy rocks.
Oh, my goodness.
Over about 3 days. With a nasty sharp rock in your back as well, just for maximum horribleness. So she was sentenced to this. Unfortunately, small mercies, they were a little bit relaxed with the punishment, because they allowed her to put on this this sort of simple robe she'd made to wear, so she wasn't naked, because she was supposed to be.
Oh.
And they actually put on so many rocks that she died in 3 hours, but I mean, it's horrendous anyway. I think her last words were something like, "Jesus, Jesus." So very, very courageous saint, and lived under this persecution. So that's where the sort of Christian persecution angle came from.
I do have to say that I noticed that the 3 hour thing, you know, that's kind of significant, you know, that she would die in the same amount of time that Jesus, we've, you know, been told it took for Jesus to die on the cross. So that's kind of really does, again, show to her holiness and the mercies that the Lord showed her. Like you said, small mercies, but...
I mean, there's something else, actually. Queen Elizabeth I heard about this planned execution, and she sent a messenger to say, "What are you doing? It's a woman. We don't kill women. You know, let her off." But the messenger didn't arrive in time.
Oh, my gosh.
So she was martyred. Because in those days, you know, they had this idea about women, and even the queen had this idea, which is a bit strange, really, but anyway. So that was kind of tragic, except, of course, she's a martyr, so she's in heaven. So from a modern standpoint, we tend to think, oh, how tragic, but, you know, from an eternal standpoint, she was probably better off.
All those things always make me think about Isaiah 55. You know, God's ways are not our ways. And that's a definite moment of God's ways are not our ways. It seems like it would have made sense for the messenger to get there on time and her to be saved of that terrible end. But that was not God's way.
But then you think of her witness, and you think of all the people who've prayed to her over the years. So
exactly. Maybe if she had been spared, we wouldn't be talking about her right now.
We probably wouldn't.
And what an inspiration she is to be faithful in the sight of persecution, which we can kind of see happening in the days in our current culture, third days. Maybe we'll all not be called to be red martyrs like St. Margaret, but maybe white martyrs, but to still be encouraged by, you know, what she had to endure to not walk away from her faith. I'm impressed. Well, how can I be impressed? She's a saint.
Wow, yeah.
She said you had three influences. So what are
three influences, actually? The other two were, bizarrely enough, they were actually kind of anti-influences. They were things I was dissatisfied with in other things. There was the film of Never Let Me Go, which I saw, and there were a couple of things I was dissatisfied with, and one of them was the fact that they are raising these children from birth to be organ donors, but then they only took a couple of organs. And this is kind of a horribly practical way to look at it, but the financial cost of doing that, it was just impractical. They wouldn't do that. Once they had established the fact that it was okay to kill people for their organs, mm-hmm. they would take them all. It just seemed so implausible to me. Plus, the characters in the film, they never try to escape. And you don't hear about characters trying to escape. And that seemed to me unrealistic with regard to the human spirit. You know, someone would try and get away. Maybe they wouldn't do it, but they would try. They would be thinking about it. Instead of which, they all just go passively, you know, along, you know, to have their organs taken. And it's just like, what's going on here? So that was the film of it. I, you know, someone who's read the book might say, oh, but there's this and that and the other. But I didn't actually read the book because by that point I had this idea, so I didn't want influence.
Oh, that makes sense.
I didn't read it. And the third one was actually The Hunger Games.
Oh, it was.
Third influence. Because in The Hunger Games, I mean, it's a very sort of gripping read, but I was very dissatisfied with the spiritual angle. The books are kind of a spiritual void. There's no faith in them. Mm-hmm. There isn't even any sort of superstition in them. I mean, at one point there's something about having a ceremony of toasting some bread, and that's like a superstitious little ceremony thing for getting married. But it's obviously included as a plot necessity.
Mm-hmm.
Plot convenience. It's not. I don't think it would be there if it didn't need to be there. So there's just no faith in the books, and I just found that quite. In a sense, it's quite effective because you've got a very chillingly empty world. Yeah. But it was also unsatisfying to me as a Christian. And the other thing about it, of course, I wasn't entirely happy with some of her moral decisions. I thought, you know. It's very difficult sometimes in situations, but you want to see people who do make the right choice, even under considerable pressure.
Right.
Whereas Katniss is like, well, you know, I can kill these people because they're making me, so it's not my fault. They're making me do it, but it's like, well, actually, you are deciding yourself to do it. So
yeah, that's interesting.
So that kind of all melded together, and. I actually had the basic idea in a dream when I was on retreat with the Dominican sisters.
Oh, that's so neat! Yeah,
and I had the basic idea in a dream, and then the rest of it kind of developed pretty quickly. But those were the influences, I think, that were working. Yeah. So
we're talking this morning with Corinna Turner. I said it right, right?
Yep.
Hey, okay, I'm going to stop worrying. I think I have it finally phonetically right in front of me that I can say Corinna Turner correctly. She is the author of I Am Margaret. This is a four-part series. There are three parts out, and we're going to go to commercial in just a few minutes, but where can we get these books, Corinna?
Yep. There's a UK edition and a US edition, so you'll probably all want the US edition with the bad spelling. and you can get that from Chesterton Press as a paperback or an ebook. You can get it on Amazon as well, and you can get it from various religious book outlets now. I can't give you a list of actual physical shops, but there are definitely online places.
Well, I'll have links to them all. And some of us are really still mourning the loss of Downton Abbey. So we might actually want the English edition to kind of help us to get over this void.
Oh, well, you can get that on Amazon as well.
I feel a very big void in my life today. I'm still 2 days later and I'm still reeling. I know the UK had ended over a year ago. So I guess we had that little extra, but I'm still... I just love that. Anyway, we're talking today with Corinna Turner. She's the author of I Am Margaret, out from Chesterton Press. This is a wonderful series. I hope you stay tuned to hear more about it, the Euro block, the moral decisions, and what's to come. You're listening to A Seeking Heart with Alison Gingras here on Breadbox Media. We'll be right back.
Redbox Media is changing the way media is done. Streaming, podcasting, live web events, mobile apps, all we do is done to embrace the current landscape and deliver content that connects you with where you are. Redbox Media.
Back
back to A Seeking Heart with Allison Gingras here on Breadbox Media. I'm joined this morning by Corinna Turner. She's the author of I Am Margaret. This is being distributed here in the United States by Chesterton Press. You can also go to Amazon to pick that up. It is I Am Margaret. There are three out so far in the four-part series. And we were talking during the break about which age group you would recommend this book for.
Yeah, normally I recommend it for sort of generally age 14 plus, but for more sheltered readers, perhaps if they've been homeschooled, maybe 16 plus, because there's some quite intense scenes at one point in book one. Not in any of the other books, oddly enough, but just in book one. So you can get past that.
Yeah, that's funny. And you also said that Chesterton Press has this picky parent guide.
Yeah, they do what they call picky parents guides for some of their books. And there's one out for book one and book two of the Our Market series so far. And there will be one for book three in due course, but to be quite honest, there's nothing terrible in it.
And we were talking about, you know, the importance of parents knowing what their children are reading and how many parents really do want to know. And I love that Chesterton actually offers the first four chapters of the three books online that you can read yourself before purchasing the book. So it gives you an idea, too, of what the book is about and whether your child might like it. Or, you know, Sarah Reinhardt and I have she comes, she's a snoring scholar. She does a lot of book reviews. In fact, one of your book, I Am Margaret, is one of them.
Yeah.
She's actually one that introduced me to it. And we both said that we really like young adult fiction for ourselves because it's like you get this great character development, you get fabulous stories without the stuff that you just find you don't need to read or to see.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's actually a great genre. You know, I read quite a lot of it myself. I think especially nowadays, you know, if you are reading mainstream fiction, for example, you'll often find that the young adult stuff is much more satisfying and much less, you know.
Yeah, I don't need 50 degrees of anything or shades of anything in my reading. Thank you very much. I just want to fall in love with the story. I want to meet new people through character development, and I don't really need to be voyeuring into their bedroom or I don't need gratuitous violence. And I know that you said that the dismantling scene is a little more intense, but I'm sure it's still part of the story. You didn't just throw in.
No, it's a martyrdom. It's a martyrdom scene. You know, there are worse descriptions in ancient accounts of martyrdoms, actually. My brother put it quite well, actually. He said it's as gory as your imagination makes it. Because of the way I wrote it, I haven't put graphic description, but some people think I have, because they've obviously got good imaginations. This is how it works. So you'll see as much as your imagination allows you to see. So some people are like, oh, it was fine. And some people are like, it was so gory. And I'm like, no, it wasn't. Read what's actually there. It was not gory. It's implied, you know.
I love that. Your brother did seem to surmise that perfectly. We're talking this morning with Corinna Turner. She is the author of I Am Margaret, out from Chesterton Press. And there is a part of the book that really was near and dear to my heart. We're talking about the main character is Margaret, and she fails that sorting test. So I love that the line in it is, I couldn't do math to save my life, literally. I'm kind of paraphrasing, but pretty close to it. I loved that. So that's how she fails, and she's put into a home and with other girls. And in there you talk about the mentally disadvantaged, or I don't think that's the word you used, but disabled. And that was near and dear to my heart because my daughter, her name's Faith, and she is adopted from China, and she's profoundly deaf. Oh. And we adopted her about 4 years old. And when we got her, we realized that, you know, where she had been and the care, she's got beautiful care. They loved her to pieces. I couldn't fault them for how much they loved her, but they gave her no education. They didn't teach her how to sign. They didn't teach her how to communicate. And when I read about, you know, those girls and the
the society's thought on them. And I see that happening in different places. It just, I don't know, it was just really near and dear to my heart, because I think often when I look at my little Faithy, that if the Lord had not called us to come and bring her home to the United States, like, what would have become of her? Because at 14, they're usually put out from their foster homes where she was living. I don't know whether they would have been able to keep her, or, you know, what would have come of her. So I love that you bring in these moral, really, you really get us thinking, truly.
Yeah, because I mean, in the Iron Market verse, as it were, the schools don't always take the pre-knowns, as they call them, the ones who they know are going to fail. Mm-hmm. They only accommodate them if you know, it's convenient for them. So one of the characters, Jonathan, he's blind, so he never goes to the school. Margaret's never met him, although he lives, you know, pretty much in the same area. Because mm-hmm. they're just like, oh, he'd be too much trouble to accommodate. We can't do anything with him. He's a pre-known. So his parents have educated him, and they've done a good job. But there's another character, one of Margaret's friends, who got knocked down when she was about 9 by a car and got brain damage. And she's been carrying on going to school because they can just give her some colouring and she sits in the corner and does that. But they're not trying to educate her because, again, oh, she's a pre-known. So it's a nasty system. In some ways, the books are kind of a warning about where we could end up with the culture of death, you know, they're... I hope we're not going to get there. But
oh, me too. I pray about that all the time.
Someone at my church who keeps coming up to me and going, it's all going to come true. It is very soon. And I'm like, I do hope not.
Yeah. I believe in the power of prayer. I really do. In your story, and I Am Margaret, it's 18 then that the sorting process begins. So are those people just kind of being like in a holding process until they're old enough to...
No, they're educated normally. Oh, you mean the pre-knowns?
Yes, the pre-knowns, yeah.
Well, I mean, if they can go to school, they go to school, but they won't be getting any special attention. Mm-hmm. So, like, Sarah goes to school, but they just give her some colouring and she sits in the corner and gets on with that. But at least she's with the other children. The Jonathan, he's at home because they won't take him. So he's just at home and his parents educate him. And he helps as much as he can. His parents manage a hotel. It's like a village. The little villages have turned into hotels in the future. Mm-hmm. So he does stuff like he goes out and he picks mushrooms. He's got a very good nose. and things like that to help them and gets his education from them.
Well, I have to say that's a very, that character has a lot of the true to life kind of thing. When one of your senses is not working, your other ones are heightened. I've seen that with my daughter, like, because she can't hear her and her eyes aren't that well either, but she smells things. And I'm like, what are you getting? Like, she'll, like, all of a sudden her face will all scrunch up and she'll start signing crazily and happily. Like if she smells popcorn somewhere or I'm like, what are you, or something smells really horrible. I'm like, what are you smelling? Anyway, so I that made me giggle too.
Yeah. No, I know someone who hasn't got very good vision and, you know, she can hear, you know, from the other end of a corridor, you know, it's just, it's hard to believe, really. Then again, I think they say a wolf can hear a leaf fall onto the forest floor.
Wow.
You know, which is pretty, and I think at some distance as well, and we just can't even get our heads around that. So, yeah.
Beautiful. another concept I really liked that you talked about was the divine denial. Can you explain what you mean by a divine denial?
All right. Well, the divine denial is when you're under suspicion of being a believer, you know, a Christian, or in fact any other religion, because all religion is banned, and they make you come before a court and you have to stand there and say, I don't believe in God. And for most religious people, this is a real sticking point. They don't want to say it. Some people do because people are human and they don't want to get killed, which is what's going to happen if they don't say it. But it's kind of like a real... it's kind of like a moment of truth, you know. Because if you don't say it, then you'll be convicted of they call it a personal practice of superstition. That's what they call it. And you'll get executed, so you'll get dismantled. And if you've been promoting the faith, if you've been, you know, if you're a priest, this is the big one, but if you've been actively evangelizing in any way and they find out, that's called, I can't remember now. well, it's basically something like promoting superstition. promoting superstition in the general population. And that carries a worse punishment, which is, this is the really bad one. This is when they, this is called conscious dismantlement. So this is when you get dismantled, but you're not anaesthetized.
Oh.
Which is pretty horrible.
That does sound pretty horrible, but we've seen that through the course of martyrdom in our church, you know, being stoned to death, like we're talking about St. Margaret. And when I hear these stories and then the things about fiction that I really love, it's just putting myself in that story. Like, what would I do? What would my response be to that?
Absolutely. I mean, if you think how slow crucifixion was, I mean, oof. Yeah, so... So it's not good, but that's why it's a really big deal whether or not you make the divine denial. Because even if you're a priest, if you make the divine denial, they will even right on the gurney when they're going to dismantle you. You can make the divine denial, and they'll take you off the gurney, and they'll give you your clothes back, and they'll let you go. And you can go. So you can see the huge temptation people are under to make it. And there's a story in the book of a priest who had a rather low pain threshold, and he kept getting caught, and every time they caught him, he'd just panic. I can't do this. And he'd make the divine denial and let him go. And as soon as he got away, he was like, oh, what have I done? What have I done, Lord? I'm so sorry. And he was completely repentant, and he went to confession and got absolved, and then he went back to work.
We're talking this morning with Corinna Turner. She's the author of I Am Margaret from Chesterton Press, and we're going to be back with her for one more segment. We hope that you join us. You're listening to A Seeking Heart with Allison Gingras here on Breadbox Media. Please stay tuned.
Breadbox Media is changing the way media is done. Streaming, podcasting, live web events, mobile apps, all we do is done to embrace the current landscape and deliver content that connects you with where you are. Breadbox Media.
Welcome back to A Seeking Heart with Allison Gingras here on Breadbox Media. I'm joined this morning all the way from the UK, Corinna Turner, and she's talking about I Am Margaret, her book out from Chesterton Press, and there's two others out right now in that series. What's the name of the other two books, Corinna?
Book two is called The Three Most Wanted, and book three is called Liberation.
And book four will be out sometime in 2016, we hope?
Yep, pretty soon, hopefully. And that's called Bane's Eyes.
Bane's Eyes. We look forward to... That's quite the teaser right there.
It makes sense when you've read book three.
It sure does. I didn't get all the way through it, as I was confessed. I didn't get all the way through it, but I'm already going, oh. Because I've read one of the, it was really funny, one of the reviews that I went and poked at was from my friend, A Life of a Catholic Librarian, lifeofacatholiclibrarian.com, Tiffany. And I loved that halfway through her review, she's like, I just sent her an email.
Yes, I got it. Yeah. Tiffany's great. Yeah.
She had reviewed it just after I Am Margaret. And she's like, I want book two now because I have questions and you need to answer them.
And I love the bit where she says, and then I realized it was a series of four books and I almost died.
That's very much Tiffany. It was great. Her reviews and the way she writes, again, lifeofacatholiclibrarian.com. I highly recommend going over there and read her book reviews because
lovely.
That's a great word for them. They are lovely. They're very much her thoughts out on a page. But I don't want to run out of time to talk about your new novella, your new series that's coming out. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, I've got a new series coming out, and it's called Yesterday and Tomorrow, and the first novella is coming out on April the 15th, so it's coming up, so I'm going a bit crazy. That's coming out, and that is made of a charity called Aid to the Church in Need, which I think you have in the US, but I think it's not quite so large, but it's quite a big Catholic charity in the UK, and it helps Christians in countries where the church is under persecution. So in Nigeria, Iraq, Syria, especially at the moment. Really great charity. And I want to support them. I'm an author, so give them a book. And the novella is it's a prequel to this, kind of the rest of the series. Mm-hmm. And it's a retelling of the story of the kidnapping of the Nigerian schoolgirls from Chibok, which most people have probably heard about, which happened in 2014, when they took 276 girls from a school. And 219 of them are still completely unaccounted for.
Oh, my goodness.
And so it's a retelling. It is a fictionalised. I've tried to keep it as close as possible to the original, except that I have moved it to the UK. And this is because I saw a very good advert by a charity in the UK, which has a second, it's done like a second a day video in the life of a little girl. Mm-hmm. At the beginning, she's a normal little girl and everything's good. And then throughout the year, you see her live through a civil war and her father disappears. And at the end, she's in a refugee camp with just her mother. With a tiny little cake with a candle that her mother's managed to find for her birthday, and it's just heartrending. I've seen it many times and it still makes me cry. But when I saw this video, I was like, well, that's how I'm going to do the novella, because I've been thinking, I really want to tell this story, but I haven't been to Africa and I haven't done a study of the culture or anything, so I'm kind of hesitating to do it. And I thought, but then I saw this video and I was like, that's how to do it, because the video is so powerful, because it's about the Syrian crisis, but the little girl is a white middle-class girl in London. And I was just like, well, that it's just, you cannot get away from it when it's so close to your culture, because normally culture provides a slight buffer, you know, and you feel really bad for people, but there is still that slight buffer that just keeps it at a slightly safer distance. So the video takes that away, and the novella aims to take that away as well. So it's like in your face, really.
Wow. And what is the so there's going to be how many in that series?
There's four in that series. There's the novella, which is called Someday. Mm-hmm. And then there's three novels. So
does it have the same, is it the same dystopian genre? Is it a new genre? Like, generally?
Yeah, it's just, I think you would call it dystopian. It's kind of, but it's really kind of an alternative version of now, or at any rate, the very near future, because the main series is about an attempted takeover by terrorists of the UK and various other places in the world. But the series is concerned with the UK. So, yes, I think you'd have to call that dystopian.
Yeah, I think we would be okay calling it that, yes.
Yeah.
And I also need you to share with me that I was lamenting over my loss of Downton Abbey, and you said that there's something in the UK that's supposed to take over that, and I need to know it again.
Yes, it's something by Trollope. Anthony Trollope, and the chap, what's his name? Is his name Julian Fellowes?
Yep, that's it.
Downton Abbey. He has filmed this book by Trollope, and I can't remember the name of it. However, the British press are kind of like, yes, we're saved. With the Downton Abbey substitute coming on, it's going to fill the hole in our lives. You know, yay. So, yes, it's coming out in the UK, or it might have come out, and it will no doubt get across the Atlantic fairly soon. So
That's very exciting. Well, we're talking this morning with Corinna Turner. She is the author of I Am Margaret and the new novella coming out called Someday. Did I write it?
Someday, yes.
Someday. And where can we get the information for that novella when it comes out? April 15th, you said?
April 15th, yes. Well, it should be available from Chesterton in the US, the US edition. And there should be a website when I have time. It's on my to-do list. But yes, it will be available from Chesterton. It will be available from Amazon. Don't know if it'll be available from Edge of the Church You Need in the US or not, actually. I have to chase that up. I'm not sure.
Well, I'll make sure that all my show notes have all the links that are possible that we can find to give people information. In fact, I even want to look to see if I can find that video on YouTube to share that, because it sounds very powerful. It sounds like, you know, it's so easy to, like you said, to look at the other worlds and go, oh, poor them, but ooh, lucky us. But we're not that far removed.
And just type in Save the Children Syria advert into Google. It'll come up.
Okay.
But I mean, you know, maybe it's different in America, but in the UK, in Europe, ISIS are on the border of Turkey. Turkey is the only country between Europe and ISIS.
Wow.
Which is kind of frightening, to be honest.
I agree
with
you.
One country that has some, possibly some ISIS sympathies is all that's between Europe and... So it's a bit like, I'm rereading at the moment Thomas More, A Dialogue of Comfort in Time Against Tribulation. And that's dealing with exactly the same situation, only back then when the Turks were invading Europe. And it's like, what do you do if you know, you're put on the spot, like in Iron Market, you know, you've got to convert to Islam or we'll kill you. It's that sort of situation, really.
Yeah. We'd like to think these are very, very futuristic and, you know, fictional, will never happen, but it's kind of impossible to look at our world and not think, like your church friend said, this is going to happen.
Yeah, so I suppose this series is another warning. Again, I hope it won't happen. It probably won't, but it is a warning. It could happen. And I think people who look at Iron Margaret or no doubt will look at this book and say, yeah, no, that could never happen. It could happen. I hope it won't, you know.
So what is your... Authors hate this question, but I'm going to ask you anyway. What was your favorite character to write in either of the series? What's been your favorite character to write? I love them all. It's like picking your favorite child. I'm like, yeah, but I can tell you my favorite child.
Okay. Well, in Iron Margaret, it's probably Lucas Everington.
Mm-hmm.
Which sound weird, you haven't got far enough through the series, but anyway. that's Major Lucas Everington, if you're not sure who. In the next series, it's probably, and I can't really pronounce their names properly, but Rished and Issa, which are the two Muslim boys that I was telling you about who jumped out of my head and ran off.
Oh, that's what they're
saying. I can't stop them. And they're just lovely characters, so...
That's wonderful. So, Corinna, tell us one more time. My guest today is Corinna Turner. She's the author of I Am Margaret. Can you tell us again all the places we can follow you and keep track of all the great things that you're doing over there in the UK?
Yeah, okay. I have a Facebook page, just Corinna Turner. I did
link to that this morning. So anybody that's over at A Seeking Heart with Alison Gingras on Facebook, there's the link to Corinna's Facebook page.
Right. I'm on Twitter, Corinna T. Author, but to be quite honest, I don't tweet much. I have a website for the Iron Margaret books, which is www.ironmargaret.co.uk. As I say, I'm rather tardy with a website for yesterday and tomorrow, but it's coming. It'll be linked from the Iron Margaret, I should think. And you can find out about all the books on Chesterton as well.
ChestertonPress.com. Thank you.
You can email. There's an email on my website if you want to get in touch with me. So.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for spending this time with us. It was such a delight to get to know you better.
It's lovely to speak to you too.
Thank you for putting up with my inability to say your beautiful first name. This has been our time with Corinna Turner. You are listening to A Seeking Heart with Alison Gingras here on Breadbox Media. Join me tomorrow when my guest is Marilyn Haynes, Pictures of Me from Pauline Books and Media.
Breadbox Media is changing the way media is done. Streaming, podcasting, live web events, mobile apps. All we do is done to embrace the current landscape and deliver content that connects you with where you are. Breadbox Media.